Access number 30638, Mr. Peter Wayne, Reel 3. Now, we're talking about your father was waiting to get his British visa.
I did manage to get a guarantee. He was waiting for the British visa. By that time, it was 1939. My mother arrived early in 1939 and was a domestic servant in somewhere down in Surrey. And we then made every effort to get father out. We spent a lot of time at the refugee committee. We had contacts, but it was waiting for the British visa, which incidentally he received on the 30th of August 1939, and he was just about to collect. He collected it he had to validate his passport, and Germany closed the borders because they invaded Poland. Another week he would have come, he would have been in England. Of course, I continued living in Darlington. My young brother in the meantime was at Great Aidan at the boarding school, and my mother was in Surrey as a domestic servant. We did manage to meet during holidays, but they were very difficult times. They were sort of, you know, I even found my studies were affected by this constant, you know, what's going to happen, where are we?
How did you feel about the approach of war? Were you very aware of it? I mean, there'd been the Chamberlain incident, the Munich crisis. I mean, what did you think? You were educated. What did you think of what was going on, 38, 39?
Well, I was more concerned with with this sort of indifference of the British establishment. You know, I mean, we were horrified. I mean, I was only a boy, but after 17, we knew exactly what was happening. And I was so worried about the fact that we were so unprepared in this country. When Chamberlain came back, I think I did actually exclaim the word peace in our time. I said, how idiotic. And I must say, a lot of our friends, associates, they did really believe that, you know, nothing would happen until, of course, you know, Czechoslovakia.
Now, what do you remember of sort of the day that, I mean, it must have been you were hoping to get your father out still.
Yes.
What do you remember, the 3rd of September? Or the, you know,
yes.
What were you doing the day war broke out?
Yes, well, it was actually a beautiful day. I was out on the Yorkshire Moors with some friends, and I was horrified because, as I said, the borders were closed. He could not come out. My father had tried then, even after the war broke out, tried to get to Cuba. They accepted refugees, but. I just thought, well, I think seeing the unpreparedness of this sort of this half-hearted effort of putting sandbags somewhere in London around some buildings, I thought, well, if there is going to be a war, I hope that we can beat the Germans. I had no idea. I had some idea of that Germany was rearming illegally. Of course, we went through the Anschluss of Austria. We saw the newsreels with these thousands of steel-helmeted Germans with tanks. And I just said, I worried. I said, what is going to happen to us? But, I mean, I did not anticipate that the Polish military would collapse. And after that happened, let's say in September, he had Czechoslovakia, I got really worried because I knew if the Germans land in England, we're the next we would be next. Gas chambers were not yet a subject in 1940, but concentration camps and, you know.
How much did you know about concentration? It's always a moot point.
Yes. Well, I mean, I was first familiar with one concentration camp called Oranienburg, which was near Berlin. We had a...
Now, how had you heard of that? Or was it just
well, it was a personal experience through some friends. We were very friendly with a German family again. They were not Jewish in any way. He was a notary public, and his wife had a brother who was actually very, very left-wing. He was an intellectual, pure Aryan German, but he was a communist. And he was grabbed by the Germans and sent to Oranienburg for interrogation, and he was mishandled very badly. Because he came out, they discharged him, and but, you know, he was bleeding, he had wounds, he was beaten. And that was the first I heard of the brutality of the concentration camp. And this would be in 1935.
Now, as things got worse, did you hear more of the... I mean, that's directed at a communist. What about the particular direction against Jews? Well, there are other people...
Yes. I mean, in 1937, I forgot to mention it, my father was also... picked up and taken to a prison.
What happened to him?
And he was there for 2 days, and they wanted to investigate something to do with photography. I don't know. They were thinking he was either spying or so. But he was not manhandled. He was, of course, he was already an elderly man. He was an old soldier, and in Berlin itself, things were not too bad. And this was in the earlier days, anyhow. It was before 1938. It was 1937.
So what happens next then? The war is declared, and how does that affect your life?
Well, we were hauled before a tribunal. And
now, well, tell me as much as you can about that tribunal.
Yes.
Do you know what it was called, or where?
It was called the Aliens Tribunal, and... We were, there was a police officer, a magistrate, and I think a solicitor of some kind. And we were interrogated, rather like, interrogated in the sense, what were you doing? And we gave a virtual CV, and we were then sent out of the room and called back after 10 minutes. And we were categorized A, B, and C. Now, category A were usually Germans who were caught in England at the outbreak of war and couldn't get back to Germany, and they were interned straight away. Category B were those with a slight doubtful background. Category C were usually Jewish or racially persecuted like ourselves, and we were allowed to remain and were not in any way discriminated against. We had to report that we had alien registration books. I don't know.
And you were categorized as C?
As C, yes, which means... refugee, that the category was called refugee from Nazi oppression.
And this took place in, what, September 1939?
Yes, I think it was.
And did they treat you reasonably pleasantly? I mean, was the tone generally not too confrontational, but reasonably
pleasant? No. I mean, they were gentlemen, like most people in this country. They did ask you. I mean, I was a boy. They wanted to know my background, and they decided this. Now, the position was that...
Now, there's one thing we may have forgotten, that this is the story of you nearly being called up, which presumably happened before the war started.
Yes.
Can we just drop that story in now? Because I've just realized, because you actually were called up by the Germans. Can you just tell me that story?
Yeah. I received a letter from the consul in Liverpool, consulate in Liverpool. There was none in Darlington. And it would be in 1938, on my 18th birthday, May 1938. And the letter was very short. In view of you are now of an age when you should report to the consulate with a view to do your military service. 1938. I wanted a bit of cannon fodder. And that's, I believe I've said it already, what happened.
No, but not on tape. Can you say it on tape?
Oh, I see. Well, I was then summons to this consulate, and I mean, of course, I knew that you must not set foot on any consulate or embassy because that's German territory. It might have kidnapped me. So I wrote back and I said, I am, because of my, I wrote in German, of course, because of my race, I am non-Aryan. I am not therefore eligible for military service to the best of my knowledge and belief. Yours sincerely. And I had a letter back which why I haven't got it. But in view of your race, you are considered as unworthy, wehr unwürdig, unworthy to serve in the German army. Heil Hitler, consul.
And you, of course, were delighted, I presume.
I was delighted because it could have, you see, when you have May 1938, my mother was still in Germany. My father was there. And I think even my brother. They could have discriminated then and said, oh, your parents are here. They could have blackmailed you. They could have done all sorts of things. And they did. I don't know. There is a word in German which is called Sippenhaft. When the German officers revolted against Hitler and had this bungled this attempt, they did not just deal with the people and hang them. They also went for their next of kin and locked them up, and put them in concentration camp. This was, of course, a very good, easy way, you see, to get information out of people. Ghastly to do that, but they did.
Now, so what happened? So tell me about these. You were Category C. What did that mean in practice? What did you have to do? You had to report.
You reported to the police.
Now, what would happen when you reported to the police station? I presume.
I remember the only thing is I had a camera, and the police took that off me. And said, look, you don't need it, but we want it. You mustn't take any photographs. Any photographs. Now comes the interesting part. People categorized as C could live very happily down here in London. But I, living in Darlington, which is very close to the northeast coast, fell into the category of refugees living near coastal areas, and we were interned at a later stage.
Now, what happened at first then? So from September, you'd been categorized. How long, how did your life change with the war, if it did? So you had to report regularly.
I reported to the police, I think it was once a month, but other than that, I noticed nothing. I don't know, my landlady probably had to also say where I was, and on occasion, I don't know, that was probably a matter for the CID, but I felt completely free to go to theaters, and of course I continued my studies until it was the 1st of May 1940, when Mr. Churchill said, collar the lot.
So, as far as you were concerned, it had just been like a phony war, nothing what should
happen. It was a phony war in every respect, and as far as I'm concerned, we went to the theatre, we did everything. I was not in any way, there was no impediment in my... I mean, the police, of course, they were very friendly, they were almost apologetic. Until, as I say, the 1st of May.
Now, what happened when you were... Were you arrested, or were you... Yeah. What happened? Tell me what happened.
Yes. Well, I was the same CID officer who dealt with me, of course, he came and he said, you know, I'm awfully sorry, we have to intern you.
It was
the 1st of May, or no, it was Whitsuntide. I think it was probably the 12th. My birthday had just passed. It was definitely May 1940.
And how did they behave as they arrested you?
Extremely friendly, apologetic. And they say, well, you know, one of the police officers said, you know, actually, by being interned, he didn't use that term, by coming with us, and you will probably be separated, by doing that, you are really doing your bit for Britain. I couldn't quite see the logic, you see. But those were his words. I remember them.
So where did you go? He came and fetched you. He picked you up at your landlady's.
My landlady was a bit distraught because, of course, I mean, she depended on the £1 that I paid her for my board and lodging. It was a guinea. £1 of one shilling. However, we were then sent to Liverpool.
Were there many of you in that party?
In Darling, I would say we were about a dozen. And I knew most of them. There were no ladies. We were all men. And the ladies, I think they were... And we were all Category C. I knew everybody there.
So you were sent, but what, by train to...
By train to Liverpool. And we were then interned in a housing estate called Huyton, Huyton.
Now, what was your first impression of it? I mean, it's not a camp; it is a housing estate. Did it? I mean, what was it like? I mean,
they were fairly newly built houses. They were council houses, and they were very basic and bare. I know we had didn't even have straw mattresses, and we were guarded by. They had barbed wire fence around this height and come, and then. They were, the accommodation was very basic, but it was new council houses which were never occupied by any tenants. And we were hounded there and guarded by old, they seemed to me very old at the time. They had no home guard, but they were obviously sort of reserve guards. Infantry men.
They were armed, I presume.
Yes, they had rifles.
And what was their attitude? How did they behave, these guards?
The guards were, well, they were bored and they were puzzled because most of us by that time spoke very good English and they didn't know what these guys in civilian clothes were doing. I mean, why were they arrested? We were asked if we are German spies, which we denied by some of them. But again, you know, they were gentlemen. They were friendly. They guarded us. They would have shot us if we wanted to escape. But there was no animosity.
What was the food like? I mean,
difficult to remember. I know we were fed. We weren't hungry.
But it's
probably army food.
Now, so how did you spend? What would a typical day be like for you during this period of high?
Well, we were anxious for news. We were locked up, and we had a commanding officer who said that he said you are civilians, but you are categorized as enemy aliens. And as such, we have no option but to lock you up. This is a government instruction, and that's it. So we waited. We did not stay long in Haidt.
So what would you do during a typical day?
Well, there were always some intellectual university professors, and they used to talk about things, but we had in Haydn, it was what we called, it was not what I call a permanent camp. It was an encampment, but worse was to come, of course.
So how long were you there for? Just
I think probably 4 or 5 weeks.
So just into June?
Yes.
From the sound of things.
I can give you an exact date. It was probably the end of May.
Till the end of May. Yeah.
Till the end of May.
And what anything happened while you were there at all?
No. I remember it was boring. It was really nothing very, very interesting. We had a commanding officer, and he said, "You're not going to stay here very long because Haydn is not very suitable for permanent residence."
So what next, then?
Worse was to come. On the perhaps the 15th. It was probably the end of May. Yes, we were again. In this time on lorries, army lorries. We were taken to Liverpool Harbour, to the harbour, and we were loaded onto a boat, rather large boat, and here. We were suddenly prodded and not treated extremely well because the tone had changed. One can understand that it was France had been defeated, things were going badly, people were panicking, Mr. Churchill had just been appointed, we thought a German invasion could be imminent.
So everyone was a bit more serious and unpleasant.
Absolutely. We were loaded onto this boat, and we had no idea where we were going. And we landed on the Isle of Man.
Anything about the voyage, or was it just?
The voyage was relatively uneventful, thank God. But 2 hours before we embarked, a German submarine had torpedoed another refugee ship, which had a few German soldiers who were taken prisoners in France. And quite a number of Jewish refugees. It was called the Andorra Star. I think I have a book about it. The Andorra Star. And that boat was torpedoed, and I think 150 or so.
Did you know about it at the time?
We were told this at the time by word of mouth. Because, I mean, we were leaving 2 hours afterwards. And we were not very happy about the fact that 2 hours previously a German submarine had torpedoed a boat. We didn't know that there were refugees on board. We didn't know anything about it. But the very fact that you leave Liverpool and 2 hours before a German submarine had torpedoed a boat with loss of life was not very reassuring. However, we arrived safely in Douglas on the Isle of Man. And we realized this is much more, this looked a much more permanent camp.
What was it called? Was it just
it
a
was
Douglas?
Douglas Central Promenade Camp. It consisted of a row of boarding houses, which had all been requisitioned, and which had all been, they had placed barbed wire around it. And again, we had quite a lot of guards guarding us, and we were allocated, I think, 6 or 8 to one of these per floor, these boarding houses.
So not quite as big or nice as hotels.
No. They were definitely boarding houses. They were on the central promenade, but they were certainly just boarding houses. They were very bare. But there we were given, I don't think we were given beds, but we were given palliasses.
And what were conditions like in these boarding houses? I mean, how we...
Well, we were there for quite a while. Actually, not all that long, until they hauled us away again. But we were quite well organized there, and we started a school.
Tell me, who organized? How did you organize amongst yourselves?
We organized it entirely among ourselves. And we had we asked for pencils and papers and paintbrushes, and they immediately started lectures and schools virtually every subject. We had a Professor Enoch, professor of chemistry, a neurologist was giving us something. We had a fashion designer, and some people immediately we wanted to do. We were given very limited time to exercise, and we certainly couldn't bathe or swim in the sea. And then we were given this document, which was an address from, which I have, which I could photocopy if you haven't got it.
Now that's from the colonel,
commander, who, it was couched in, would you like me to read it?
Well, if the excerpts that seem appropriate, yeah, because remember they can't see it, although we'd like a photocopy of it at some point to put in the file.
I mean, Colonel Slatter said, "It's my wish that every man who enters internment on this island shall be assured that nothing avoidable will be done that might add to his discomfort or unhappiness. It must be obvious to you that a uniform code of discipline is essential if community of men are to live together successfully." Also very reasonable. It says, "There is, however, a good reason for every order, and there will be no aggression. The officers and troops who are given charge of you are men of understanding. In any case, it's not a British characteristic to oppress the man who is powerless to retaliate, and you will find no one anxious to foster a spirit of enmity which, within the confines of an internment camp, can achieve nothing." You see...
This is from Colonel Slater, did you say?
Colonel Slatter.
Slater. Yeah.
No, it's two T's. But
right.
You cannot... S.W. Slatter, Lieutenant Colonel. Now,
that's what he said. And I notice it's in English and German, so that's
English and German.
But is that, I mean, it's a perfectly sensible document in a sense. Was that how they behaved? Was that real? Did he mean what he said? As far as you could judge.
I think by and large, I must say yes. We had a lot of sort of minor complaints, which were, of course, put into writing. And a lot of them were... were later on fulfilled. The main complaint we had was communication with our relatives.